Now we're going to look at how the Iranian war is impacting Iraq. Within the last 24 hours, missiles have struck the US embassy in Baghdad, and the embassy has advised all US citizens in three blunt words to leave Iraq now. The consulate of the United Arab Emirates in Erbil has also been struck by drones for the second time in a week. And of course, on the 12th of March, six US military personnel died in the crash of a refueling aircraft on Iraqi territory. The aircraft was taking part in America's Operation Epic Fury against Iran. Indeed, since the war started, Iraq's been attacked by both sides in the conflict. Iran and its proxies have targeted American bases, while the US has bombed pro-Iran groups in Iraqi territory. To discuss the deteriorating situation, we're joined now by Mahsin Al-Shamri, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Boston College. And we welcome Mahsin back to Sunday Extra after we spoke in February about the machinations around the appointment of a new prime minister in Iraq. Assistant Professor Al-Shamri, welcome back to Sunday Extra.
Thank you again for having me.
It's good to be speaking to you, although obviously not in ideal circumstances for Iraq. I wonder if you could give us some more detail on the attacks from both sides that have happened on Iraqi territory since the war began and your assessment of their ramifications for Iraq.
I'd like to start by saying that for those who follow Iraq closely, it's always been a site of contention between the United States and Iran. Mm. So the Iraqi government has had a long experience of trying to really balance both sides. And I think things got really bad in January 2020 when the U.S. assassinated Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian commander of the Revolutionary Guard Corps in Baghdad Airport Road. And that was really the culmination of how tense the relationship can be and how it plays out on Iraqi territory. Since then, we've seen, since 2023 specifically, we've seen the Iraqi government really try to limit the attacks from paramilitary groups that are aligned with Iran on U.S. presence in Iraq and on the U.S. allies in Iraq as well. But they've been limited in their ability to do this. And different circumstances have placed Iraq in a position where it looks like it can be really dragged into this war despite the best efforts of the government to prevent that. And the vulnerabilities is that there's really targets for both sides in Iraq. The U.S. has a presence in many ways in Iraq. A lot of different Western countries, I'm sure you saw with the French soldiers in Erbil as well. And then conversely, there's also a lot of actors aligned with Iran in Iraq. So it is in a unique position where there are targets for both sides, and Iraqi sovereignty is so weak that violations have been occurring recurrently since the regime change in 2003, honestly.
Mm-hmm. You wrote for the Brookings Institution this week that the longer the Iran war lasts, the greater the risk that Iraq will descend into chaos, and that the timing of this upsurge in conflict couldn't be worse really for Iraq because it's in the middle of a political transition, which I think we spoke a little bit about last month. But could you tell us where that political transition is at as we speak?
Sadly, it hasn't really moved much since we've spoken last time. I mean, we've surpassed the days allocated by the Constitution to select a president and a prime minister and such. But Iraq is still in government formation. And, you know, government formation normally is a very long process in Iraq. It takes on average 6 months. So it's not unusual per se in that sense, but it's really unfortunate that we're having a war occur in the periphery during a political vacuum in which the government is acting on an interim basis, which limits its ability to respond in a way that we would ideally like to see.
You've also said that the assassination of Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, has reshuffled the hierarchy of Shia religious authority worldwide. How so? Could you explain a little bit more for us?
Yes, absolutely. So I will say definitively that the highest ranking Shia cleric in the world now resides in Iraq. And for a long time, people did believe that even with Khamenei, when he was still alive, the highest ranking Shia leader was still in Iraq. So there was a lot of competition. And the way, I mean, this isn't quite like the Vatican or the Pope, right? The way that these clerics are high ranking isn't because they have like a specific position that's institutionalized. It's really about the people who follow them, the number of resources and the people they can mobilize. Basically, it's about their popularity. And while prior to the assassination, there was seemingly kind of an even following across the Shia world for both clerics, we're now in a position where it seems like the highest ranking cleric, in the sense that the cleric who has the most followers worldwide, including in Iran, by the way, is now Grand Ayatollah Sistani, who's in Iraq. And this is monumental because Grand Ayatollah Sistani is someone I describe as a political realist. He is not someone who takes political instability lightly. He's very concerned about being drawn into war. He always cautions against violations against international law. So it's quite a 180 from the previous situation, one could say.
Mm-hmm. So how has Grand Ayatollah Sistani responded to the death of Ayatollah Khamenei? And what, I suppose, has been the reaction also of other Shia religious leaders within Iraq to what's happened in Iran?
So the Shia religious leaders who are part of the seminary in the city of Najaf, so the ones who are organized around this important seminary, all follow Grand Ayatollah Sistani's guidance. And so what we know of him is that he issued three statements since Khamenei's assassination that have given us insights to what he sees as happening. The first one was following the assassination, a very short message, basically of condolence to the Iranian people, urging them to unite, saying all the things about how Khamenei had this clerical position, how he was a leader of a government, how he was a leader of a state. So, you know, very formal, very normal, as one would expect. Had there not even been a war, I don't think we would have seen a different kind of statement. But then the statement that followed was a really interesting one. And that one was specifically about the war. And it specifically talked about the violations of international law that were being committed by the United States and Israel in their attack on Iran. And it's actually a very, very detailed analysis of how international law was being violated. He's talking about harm to civilians, about not having authority from the Security Council to engage in this war, lists different kinds of violations, and then calls upon the international community to find a peaceful resolution to Iran's nuclear program, suggesting that he thinks this is the heart of the conflict. And then we saw finally a third statement when Khamenei's son, Mujtaba Khamenei, became the new supreme leader. And this statement didn't name him by a name, but was basically an acknowledgement and wishing luck to the new supreme leader of Iran. Interestingly, not really dwelling on his religious credentials, which I think Mujtaba Khamenei would have liked to see someone of Sistani's stature say something about his religious credentials, but just an acknowledgement mostly of his political position.
President Trump initially encouraged Kurdish involvement in the Iranian conflict, but then stepped back from that. I wonder if you could give us your analysis of the situation in Iraqi Kurdistan at the moment.
I mean, it's important to remember that Iraqi Kurds have achieved stability after decades of instability and under the previous Ba'athist regime of Iraq, under extreme repression and genocide. And so their stability is extremely hard earned, and I think they value it very much. So the U.S. has been their ally and has supported them in their pursuit of federalism, decentralization, a semi-autonomous region in Iraq. But they value their stability right now, but they also saw recently what happened with the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces in Syria and how the U.S. pressured them to kind of relent to the pressure of Damascus and to concede all the demands that they had made for semi-autonomy prior to this. And it made the Americans look like unreliable allies. And so the Kurds in Iraq, despite the pressure from the U.S. administration, they tried to balance against being active in the Iranian front by allowing Iranian Kurdish opposition groups to engage in an insurgency from Iraqi Kurdish territory.
And just finally, Marcin, given what's happened to date since the Iran war began, how significant do you think the risk is that Iraq will descend into more open civil conflict?
What's concerning to me is not that Iraq will descend into civil war. I think there's plenty of safeguards against that, largely stemming from Iraqis just being unwilling to engage in war after repeated experiences with it. So I don't see any societal fractures that can fall into civil war. But I do worry about the instability that will arise from basically having to live under bombardment from different sides and basically being living in the periphery of conflict, attacks from Iran, attacks from the US, instability that will create in terms of access to, you know, water, energy, just goods and services, the disruptions to everyday life. And I think we're already seeing that Iraq is so oil reliant and most of its oil is exported through the southern the ports that go through the Strait of Hormuz. Mm. And it's already being extremely disruptive.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's obviously a very uncomfortable position to be so close to the conflict and to be getting bombs from both sides, as you said. Mahsen Alshamari, thank you so much for joining us once again on Sunday Extra.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Mahsen is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Boston College. And if you want to listen to our previous interview with Mahsen about the machinations over the Iraqi Prime Minister, that's also available on the ABC Listen app.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.